Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife. And you are Going In Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, Reno, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome back to Going In Raw.
We got a special guest. James is here. James is here.
I want to be a little bit more professional this time, and I want to show off my, like, Elias, custom Elias shirt.
That's a great shirt.
It's like a minimalistic version of yours. Like, you have the Neville one, but yours is, like, way cooler.
Wait a second. You say custom. What's the deal with that?
I bought this on Redbubble. It's not even a picture. No, Elias is the only shirt in the WWE shop I bought it, and it's crap. It's like really.
It's because of the material?
Yeah,
the material is terrible.
It's crap quality, so I just went on Redbubble and I searched Elias, and it's even dated. I mean, it's got stamps and still on it.
And the Drifter. They don't call him the Drifter.
That's OG, though. That's like original.
That shows
Elias
your Drifter bona fides right there.
I like it.
That's rad. I love it. Anyways, welcome to Going In Raw. James, of course, from Couch Hop, here once again. I think you're the, like... Okay, so we've had, like, a few guests. Okay, so Dan, I don't really consider a guest, but like, because he started the podcast with us. But whenever he comes on now, like, half the people love him, half the people, like, are like, no, good.
What was my reception?
It was all good.
Unanimous, across the board, positive.
You say that now, but then, like, they'll be comments early.
I'll be this episode.
This fucking guy again, right?
With this fucking Redbubble shit. He should be official. Anyways, we all just got back from No Mercy.
No Mercy.
And we didn't see the pre-show or the first match. So, James, that's why we brought him on. Because he sat through the entire thing.
You're using me for my pre-show knowledge.
Yeah, once we're done talking about The Miz, you can pretty much go. You're good to go. Or you can stick around. It's up to you.
That was the first match on the card, though. That wasn't even on the pre-show.
I know.
We were waiting in line for hot dogs.
Holy crap!
You missed that, too.
Yeah, like, it's funny. We do this for a living, but, like, we'd rather get hot dogs nachos than actually watch the match.
I almost missed that, too, because I had to go back outside to get the rest of the Couch Up guys inside. So, like, I had to get up during Elias's singing. The sole reason that I fucking came out...
Yeah, I was really
bummed. ...to see Elias, and they texted me while he was singing, and I had to get up, and I had to go out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just telling them to wait. I would have known I wasn't really bummed too much about the Miz, Jason Jordan, missing that. I was bummed out about missing Elias, though. Because I want to walk with Elias.
I do, too. Yeah. And he's really, really shit live, singing-wise. And I think that's his shtick. I get it. But, like, I don't know why I came across so well on TV. Like, I actually thought, like, man, maybe he could sing, you know? But, like...
I have a theory about Elias, and I brought up to Larson before. I think he can. He just fakes it so that he can't.
Phones it in so that way it's like the...
Yeah.
So he gets the booze.
So, like, because I think... I don't know. Larson knows way more about it. Do you play any instruments? Do you play guitar, James?
No.
No, Larson does. I don't. I love music, but I can't play.
I'm not gifted in that.
But he's not entirely sure. He thinks it's possible that Elias is really good, but fakes it.
No, I don't think he's really good. I think he might be good.
Your actual opinion is that he might be good.
But he's not going to be shredding any solos.
Yeah.
Like, he can handle rhythm work, but he's not going to be, you know, like Jimmy Page or anything like that.
I don't know, man.
Ripping solos.
I think he's a virtuoso.
No, I don't think so.
I like it. I still think, like I was saying on the way over here, it reminds me of the Rock concerts. And, like, that was my favorite, like, iteration of the Rock was... Hollywood heel. So when he did like the three or four Rock concerts or whatever it was, like I really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get that every time with Elias, even if he is phoning it in and it's shit just for the sake of it, like I eat it all up. And
it's great.
Everybody else does in like a more of a negative way. Like everybody just wants him to go the hell away.
I like
LA was not having it.
I like that the three of us are early on this thing because I honestly think that people are. Like, some towns are really starting to come around to it. They're starting to get it, and others aren't. But you can see his face every time he does it. I'm going to go back. We're going to go back and watch the pre-show and the first match so that we'll be informed come our Raw recap. I think this week we're doing like a Raw and SmackDown recap.
We are because we're got
traveling on
a
Tuesday.
Bunch of stuff going on.
But I'm going to go back and rewatch it because I would like that Elias, you can tell he's so close to laughing sometimes.
Yes.
Because he knows that what he's doing is so bad and ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory about him. So I love Elias. Anyways, he had a match after he ran. I assume he ran. Well, how much did you see any of his singing?
Yeah, he typical like LA right. City of Angels, yada yada yada. I'm here. Like he said something like, "It's funny because while I'm here, I'm asking for help," or something like that. Something like to that degree. Again, I was texting and stuff like that, so I didn't get all of it. And then I had to get up after Apollo came out, so Apollo Crews was the person he faced.
All right. This is an 8-minute match.
That's a pretty good...
That's a chunk of time right there.
It's only slightly shorter than the main event.
Than the main event and the
women's match.
Otherwise, yeah, they gave that 8 minutes and 35 seconds.
I only got back in time to see him hit the finish and
I like that neckbreaker of his.
Yeah.
I really like the drift away.
Sharp neckbreaker.
I'm a big fan of neckbreakers in general.
Then he had a bit. He did have a bit after the match where he continued to beat down Apollo.
Oh, nice.
And then Titus got like kind of involved a little bit and was kind of like a "What are you doing?" kind of deal. And then he slid out the side and left. But it was just like a little tiny morsel, I guess, that they gave at the end there.
I want to see a feud there. I like Titus Worldwide.
Yeah.
I love Elias. I want to see that feud.
Yeah.
It'd be good.
It'd be solid.
Good.
Is that like a bit of a... Is it weird, though, that Elias would go from Finn to Apollo? Because you think, like, they intro him where he's, you know, up here, and then it's like he's battling Finn, and he's got some good... He had some good traction with that.
My expectations for Elias were so in the dirt, were so low, given his time in NXT.
Yeah.
The fact that they...
Even with El Vagabundo?
Especially with... When Chris Hero destroyed his guitar, I was like, is he even going up to main roster, or is there like another developmental that he can go even further down?
Is he going back
to OVW? I just didn't know of him.
To be frank, I'm actually surprised that they let him break a guitar over somebody, because I didn't think they would ever let him even do that spot in the first place. I didn't think that they would let him do that.
So, no, I think this is good. I like this because... Here's the thing, him and Finn, I don't think they ever had a pay-per-view match.
No, they didn't.
So it wasn't like a real feud. I mean, they had him doing that stuff, but it was always kind of obvious that he was kind of like just weak compared to Finn. So they need to build him up somehow. I just don't know. I don't know what his ceiling is. Like, I don't know if they'll ever take him serious enough to challenge like...
It's a bit crowded at the moment.
Oh, they're
Elias to push through. Even if they wanted Elias to push through.
Yeah.
I think he's the guy that... they can probably know they can rely on to fulfill a certain role. I've just sort of been resigned to the fact that nobody's ever going to move up. Nobody's going to move down. They just like where people are.
Yeah.
That's like a thing, though, that I don't know if that's a fundamental issue, but that's something that I've noticed for the past couple weeks on Raw. Not even like, you know, keeping in mind the No Mercy stuff, but like the past couple weeks of Raw have been very predictable, but in a way where it's like, you already know going in. It's like you know Finn is going to go over on this person because he needs to get built up for this.
Yeah,
and it's like, it's very, there is no upsets. There's nothing that happens. And it's usually you can predict, and it's usually it's not predictable or anything like that. Or it is predictable, I should say. But like, the past couple of Raws have been very, let's put this team against this team, but it's Dean and Seth. They got to go into the pay-per-view looking strong, so they're just going to steamroll right through whoever it is. It's very, very cookie-cutter.
It is predictable. Because the exciting stuff with Raw lately has been in the Universal Championship scene, simply because it's big bastards fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it's like, okay, we kind of realize that they're sending Brock on one path to meet up with Roman at WrestleMania, but at least in the meantime, we can get things like the Cena Reigns promo stuff, which has been really good.
Yeah.
We can get things like Braun no-selling a German suplex, which is really good. But you're absolutely right, and that's one of the things that's been difficult to enjoy about the tag team division, is that it is so predictable. We know every week, Larson, who's going to eat the pin every week?
Carl Anderson.
It's going to be Carl Anderson.
He's employed to eat pins, it seems like.
Machine Gun is eating the friggin' pin every week.
Every week.
So, no, it absolutely, it totally is. And that is the bummer, because we've heard not just through, like, I think Cody Rhodes mentioned this in one podcast, and Damian Sandow mentioned another one, that everybody has their roles. It's like Sami Zayn. I think Justin Labar from, what is it, WrestleZone?
Yeah.
Okay. Mentioned this, and I credit because I saw it, and I was like, yeah, it makes total sense. He talked about Sami Zayn. And he's like, you know, Sami's probably never really going to get to the main event scene because they know that he's going to be over regardless of whether or not he loses.
Yeah.
Or wins. And so they can just have him lose, and people are always going to be behind Sami Zayn.
But that's...
It's crap.
It is.
It's crap.
Because you know... The stick with Sami specifically is that everybody sees him as a potential another Daniel Bryan case.
Exactly,
and they know he has the potential
and
to get
there. And if you watched his run at NXT, you saw that storyline, a similar storyline play out. And when he finally won the title, it was cathartic.
Yeah. The same thing can be said about, in like an inverse way, like Bray Wyatt. It's like they know, and that's why, honestly, let me ask you, I think that people boo Bray at this point because they're booing his wasted potential.
I absolutely...
That's got to be the case.
Boo Bray because I don't care, but it's not because I don't care about Bray. It's because I don't care with how they've been booking it.
It's because you
I
know
don't,
what's going to happen.
I cannot invest... And obviously, we'll get into it, I guess, with the
like, oh, yeah,
match.
Yeah.
But, like, I just... I can't get into Bray anymore.
Yeah.
I can't find myself being invested in Bray Wyatt as a character at all anymore. He's just false hope. Promos leading nowhere, Demolish eating the pins. Just there's nothing. There's nothing there.
When he became world champion over on SmackDown in that program with Randy Orton, we both said this is probably going to end in the most boring way fashion, with Orton going over as a face as WWE champion
at WrestleMania. Yeah,
boring
exactly
Orton as face, even though. Along the road, there were some kind of interesting things happening with Orton and Bray, like Orton having eye laser beams and shit like that, and being able to teleport or whatever he did, and then he burned down Bray's house. It was like, okay, we know Orton's going to burn down his house. Vince McMahon views that as a face activity. That's something that a face would do, apparently, according to Vince McMahon. And, like, his swerve came out of nowhere, and we knew where it was leading. It was going to lead to... Did he win the title at Mania?
Yep.
Yeah, in that horrible projection match.
Yeah.
But they gave you like a little bit of hope going like through that. With even adding in Luke Harper into the
match. Yeah, right.
You know,
Yeah. But in the end, what we feared
was exactly
played
what
out
happened.
Exactly. You know, and so you're absolutely right. That is one of the frustrating things, is that you know Elias, even if the crowd gets so behind him, are they really ever going to push him? You know?
No,
probably not. So we just sort of enjoy. But, you know, he's still employed, so we can just enjoy him for years. That's where I'm at this point. It's just I want people to get their rewards, but at the same time, it's like I just kind of understand that I'm pretty sure, like, until things change with, like, the people running the show, like if Vince retires, then we might see some change there.
Maybe.
Because you look at NXT and how Triple H books things. Although we did hear that, I mean, we have heard that Triple H is kind of the guy who also thinks that roles are roles.
Yeah.
So, who knows? Anyway. Then the actual show started.
Yes.
We were still in line for food.
It was a really slow line for hot dogs.
It was really slow line.
Really slow line, yeah. So we had the Intercontinental Champion, The Miz, taking on Jason Jordan.
Yes.
So, James.
Miz is super over in LA.
He is.
There was no doubt about it. Very pro Miz. There was nothing on poor Jason Jordan to the point where I feel like he was getting so many anti Jason Jordan chants that it seemed like it was like a little bit much, or maybe it was just kind of like out of nowhere to him.
Because
people were just saying like, you know, like who's your daddy chant and shit like that. Where it was just like stuff like that was coming out for him, anti Jason Jordan chants. But I mean, it was a solid match. I feel like it wasn't like anything too crazy. It was a typical like Jason Jordan fighting off the odds. He had like a spot where he did a belly to belly from he did it on the outside. I think it was on Bo into the other two into Miz and
Curtis Axel.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think that was probably the big spot of the match, and okay. everything else was just kind of like run of the mill.
Did Miz win because the Miztourage were helping him out, or was it a clean finish?
Shit, I don't even. I'm trying to think. I think they definitely interfered throughout
there
the whole match.
There was some sort of distraction. Okay, yeah.
It
yeah.
was yeah. What did he do? Jesus, I don't know. It was
bad. Now they're lighting up in the car, right? You guys were there. You didn't even see.
Yeah, now I'm. Yeah, I should have recollected this way better. Keep in mind, I had a couple beers. You know,
no,
sorry.
Okay.
You actually, skull crushing finale yeah. though.
Okay, all right.
Oh, he got the actual pin though.
Yes.
Okay. Did. Okay.
Oh, okay. All right.
Then afterwards, Jason Jordan cut a promo, which was pretty much it. Kind of went. I know you guys here in L.A., you guys chant ironically when Kurt comes out, and you guys say, you suck, but I'm saying this in more of a legitimate sense. When it comes to The Miz, he sucks.
Mm.
No, that was it.
Oh, man.
That was it.
Yeah.
Well, that's not...
Yeah, that was it.
That's not terribly good.
That was it.
If we were waiting in the line, I heard part of it. I was like, did he just tell the crowd that they suck?
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I'm
like Jason Jordan turned heel, that's cool.
I think the crowd was saying he sucks.
Yeah.
But he kind of spun it into like Kurt's you suck thing, which is I guess more of a positive now. And then he took that.
Oh, Jason, no, it's not that, man. They're not giving you the same thing that they give you dad. No, nobody's doing that.
Yeah, I don't know. It was kind of awkward, then he just got out and left.
That doesn't sound like a good litmus test. Because like we both kind of figured that match would be kind of a litmus test for Jason Jordan. The WWE could sort of see how the crowd would react to him, how he would react to the crowd. From what you're telling us, sounds like none of that went his way.
LA is really weird because this was my first time being at the Staples Center. I usually go to the Pepsi Center in Denver when we lived in Denver.
Right.
And Denver is very pro-faced, cheer-faced, boo-heel. And there is no in-between. But LA was like... kind of in between, but it was almost as if LA just didn't know what it wanted. So it would be like, in some cases it was flip, but then maybe midway through a match, like it might change. They'll have a couple zany chants throughout.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a weird atmosphere, but it definitely didn't help Jason Jordan. I mean, he was always like he's great. Like obviously, like in the ring and everything.
Yeah.
Character wise. Lacking without Chad Gable, but just doesn't like nobody's buying into this fucking Kurt Angle thing.
I know
nobody's buying into it. Especially here's the thing, like that I think with this, where you can't have a program going on with Cena and Reigns where you're acknowledging internet dirt sheets and you're acknowledging the insides of the company and the ins and outs and all this crap. And then on the flip side, you have a illegitimate child storyline going on with Kurt Angle.
Which is like, very Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And expect people to buy into that, too, while you're on the same exact Raw, on the same program, you're having another storyline that's feeding us insider information. Yeah, it's like, how can you do both at the same time? It's really weird.
Because what I noticed with the crowd, I don't know if the crowd tonight was so strange. I don't want to say strange, but it's like... they just seemed amplified from, like, the usual crowd. Like, they were more torn over Roman Reigns and John Cena than, like, crowds usually are, and they usually are very torn. You know, it's like, they boo Cena, they say you suck, they say you still suck, they say you're boring, you can't wrestle, and then at the end, you know, we love you, Cena.
Thank you, Cena.
They seemed torn about Cena, but they didn't seem at all torn about Roman Reigns.
Yeah, they're very.
That was the one consistency.
Yeah,
they were very negative. But there was like in my section, there was a lot of like pro Reigns people that were trying to get stuff started.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really work too well, but they were there, and they were somewhat vocal. Mostly moms. You thought that Reigns was pretty hot.
Yeah,
and that didn't really go so well for them. But I mean,
has The Miz taken the slowest route to turning? You know how the thing I like. Somebody gets so over as a heel that they can't be heel anymore. They go face. Like The Rock, perfect example.
Yeah.
He went heel at Survivor Series night. No.
That was before that.
With The Nation, he was a heel.
Yeah.
People loved him so much, though, because he was so entertaining that he didn't have a choice but to be face.
But then he turned heel on him again.
And, you know, like a huge heel. So that happens when, like, you can be a really hot heel and so hot and so entertaining that people turn you face, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like The Miz has taken the super scenic route to get there. It's literally taken his whole career of being a heel, Like, he tried being a face, and it totally didn't work years ago. It was terrible. He was doing the figure four. But now he's at the point where he's been around so long, and he's established such a legitimacy that he's starting to become famous.
It's kind of hard, right? Because you have... first of all, is he billed from Hollywood? Is he still billed from Hollywood, California? That could have maybe had something to do with it.
Maybe
here, but like at the same time, you also have Miz cutting promos where he says like to Enzo, you know, on Monday, where it's like, I was the guy in your shoes in the locker room. I was the guy that got shit on.
Yeah.
I got through it. Here's me now, essentially. Exactly. And it's just like how just... Someone can't like look past that, you know. When he's cutting those promos on Talking Smack, Rip Talking Smack. But when he was doing his thing on there, like you couldn't look past that.
We have the name for that is the heel that makes good points. We mentioned that, and people really respond to it. I go back to the
Program of Cena for WrestleMania.
The Program of Cena for WrestleMania. Yep. The build up to that. You know, you look at Miz and Maryse, and it's like, wow, they've been together for a very long time. They actually legitimately seem like a loving couple. And you look at Cena and Nikki Bella, and it's like, this seems like the most prefabricated fake shit ever. And it's like, Miz, why is Miz the heel here?
I know.
Like, he's making all the good points. Like, he actually has a loving relationship, and John Cena is a robot.
And the fact that Cena proposed to Nikki in the ring.
Validated that completely.
Completely validated.
And then you go back to
the Miz critiques.
You go to the promo with Enzo you're talking about. And Enzo says, you're nothing but a paper champion. The crowd literally just went,
what?
No, he's been intercontinental. He's about to break the record for all time combined, like, in 6 months or something.
Yeah.
And so, like, even the crowd, like, any crowd, like a Mark Town, a Smart Town, whatever you want to call it, they all understand, no, the Miz is pretty legit. He's been around for a while. He knows what he's doing, you know?
And he's, like, paid his dues.
It funny that it's like he's making that turn. It's just taken, like, the longest amount of time, like, ever. Like, literally a
couple
16 years.
Years
or whatever it is.
Well, yeah.
I mean, going back, you want to go back to, like, the very beginning of his career. Because he couldn't, Anyways, next up we had Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt.
We actually watched this match.
Finn had great tights. Great tights, yay or nay? Nay?
I didn't. I didn't dig the gray.
Oh, they were great with the gray jacket.
Yeah, I was too into the gray. Maybe I'm just not used to him like being in gray. I guess. I mean, I saw some of this more like wilder stuff like in New Japan and shit, but like, I don't know. It just seemed weird. It just seemed like.
What if it was silver?
Is that really that far off? Like silver? Like,
well, I mean, like metallic.
Oh, metallic. Okay.
Yeah. What about iridescent?
Like the gray that he was going for kind of looked like Neville's old like NXT gear,
except
Neville had like a little bit of a yellow accent on it. I guess I don't know. I was kind of iffy on it. I guess I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. Guy tries to stray outside of his box, and James is over here saying no,
saying nay.
It could be as well that I'm just not into this feud at all, and I just
you put the feud on your
I didn't want to watch it.
Brad Wyatt's fault.
I didn't want to see
trunks.
It. I wanted to go get a beer. I didn't even want to watch this match. And I know that's like super biased or against it. Like I just
no, it's
care
okay.
Less.
Nobody can no
nobody cares,
nobody
about,
cares
the
about the feud.
Okay,
nobody cares about the feud. I did like a couple spots.
We should say that Finn was one of the handful of faces that was that were consistently cheered throughout the match.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. People love Finn. People really love Finn. Have you seen any of his New Japan promo stuff?
Not too much, other than the backstage stuff.
A
little bit of the backstage
stuff. I love this. I wish that, like, when he was, like, kind of sort of crazy and, like, the long one. I love that. I was showing that to Lars today. I really wish that he would just do that stuff. But, I mean, standing around, he looks cool, too.
Oh, he is, like, the coolest-looking guy.
He is a very cool-looking guy. But, yeah, no, he beat Bray Wyatt. He won. Have we been mentioning? Oh, yeah, we have been mentioning. Who he beat Bray Wyatt. I thought this was the best match that they've had.
Yeah,
I like when Bray Wyatt does the suplex throwing thing. That was cool. He did that, like,
yeah, he tossed him.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He tossed him. I like that.
He
before
him.
The match started, he attacked Finn and then did a uranage on the announce table.
Yeah, that was
cool.
And
it made it seem like Finn wasn't going to be able to wrestle.
Yeah.
I couldn't even... I feel like I'm being, like, pessimistic.
No, you're good. You're good.
This feud, though, like, for me, was so... Like, I was so over it that, like, even something like that I couldn't buy into because...
Oh, yeah.
I felt if anything, if you were going to pull something like that, don't do the ribs. Do his bad shoulder that he already had. Like, if you're going to do something like that, it's like, how am I supposed to believe that this dude cannot continue? Oh, you cracked his rib or something like that. But this dude already wrestled through a whole match at SummerSlam with a pulled-out shoulder. Like, I just saw him do that, like, just a few years ago, and he literally, back in the match. Like, come on. Like, a little thing like that was supposed to take him out. I couldn't buy it.
To piggyback off that, too, I think what kind of bugged me about the beginning when Bray, like, destroyed him first, and he had, like, five refs helping him up the ramp, and it took Bray goading him back into the ring to get him to compete.
Yeah. Like, he was legitimately going
to
be done.
And I'm just thinking to myself, he was just going to walk away, like... Wouldn't he have just through his own grit and determination, not being like, hey, McFly, what are you, chicken? You know? It was like that.
I was kind of half expecting him to go backstage, braid, talk some trash, and he comes out as Demon Balor.
You know that shit takes like hours.
No, I know, but I thought maybe he had his jacket on the whole time because they did on his back.
Oh, okay.
So he's going, getting like a quick... Like,
it would have been cool if he did like a really messy demon.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a really like hastily thrown together one.
Yeah, yeah. Do best you can in 30 seconds.
I did it myself.
But that was the thing that I couldn't really fundamentally get behind with the start of this was like Bray initially challenging Finn and Bray beating Finn when like he came over from like the draft and it was like a super decisive victory for Bray. And then SummerSlam came, and Finn pulls out the demon, and suddenly, like, you know, it goes in Finn's favor. But then it starts... Bray, in a way, like, he makes up this weird excuse that it's like, you could only beat me because you were the demon. Mm-hmm. And when it's man-to-man, then I will beat you. But at the core character of Bray Wyatt, he is a supernatural character.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, his character is supernatural, so by that logic, like, Finn should be at a disadvantage because he is just normal Finn.
Yeah.
But Bray is still supernatural Bray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird, like, that he would come on the Titantron and be like...
Maybe Bray Wyatt has the thing like Superman has in Fortress of Solitude in Superman 2. He can walk in there and lose all his powers. And then he walks back in there when he walks back and gets back.
That could be. I mean, if you couldn't teleport.
If you've seen all the shit
that Bray Wyatt can do in the bowels of an arena, like teleporting shit, like maybe you're right. Maybe he can't do that in the ring. He can only do it in the bowels of the arena. Or maybe he's just toying with people. That would be a great end game for him. If they wrote all of his losses into the storyline, into like one big storyline for him, where he's like, yeah, man, I was just playing with you all. I'm going to beat you anytime. And he just goes on like his crazy win streak, just like Brock and Roman and everybody. That's in my fucking fantasies.
Yeah, that's never happening.
He's going to be a jobber to stars for life, dude. But okay, going back to what we were talking about with Elias, in terms of like people staying in their roles, that bums me out infinitely more for a guy like Finn Balor, who was the first Universal Champion. The only reason he had to drop it was because he got injured. And granted, he probably would have dropped it to Brock or Goldberg anyways. But that bums me out because I don't know when him or Seth, who I really like, are ever going to find their way back up to that scene while Roman is clogging the drain, basically.
Yeah.
That's the big bummer to me. It's like, me and Larson are talking about this a little bit. It's like, we kind of just want the Roman experiment to just get here and like give them the damn title. And then...
Yeah, WrestleMania can't come soon enough.
But it's funny that you guys say that, though, because, like, people were saying that same exact thing when they gave it to Roman before, and they were like, we just want this experiment to be over. But then, it ended.
But we
and
all,
then it started it again.
But we all knew that that wasn't the real experiment. It was like, we all knew that it had to be against Brock. He had to fight Brock, beat him cleanly.
That was the original finish of WrestleMania 31, but then the crowd just crapped all over it, and so here comes Seth.
I know, which was great, because they listened to us, and it was amazing. We were there. It was an amazing moment.
Yeah, it was a great moment.
Speaking of Seth...
we should say that Finn beat Bray. We didn't say that.
I said that at the very beginning when I was saying, have you been talking about that?
Sorry. I was too focused. I was reminiscing.
I accept your apology.
I was reminiscing about his gray tights.
He technically did...
Hey, those were really great gray tights.
They were really great
tights. Fantastic gray tights.
Great.
You know, you're young. You're supposed to be more into change than we are, man. We're supposed to be old.
It's not all in the gray, you know. I'm like, you know, it's either black or white. There is no gray.
Whoa.
That's pretty deep.
That is deep. That's deep shit.
But technically, Finn gave Bray, was it two coup de grace?
He gave one with his head. Standing one.
The stall, the one in the back of his head. He took
the
back.
Yeah, the one in the back
of
his head.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
no, I think the coup
de grace. That should have been like a finish.
That seems like more devastating, getting a couple boots to the back of your head versus your chest.
So does that count as a coup de grace? No?
I don't think so. Coup de grace is what he does.
Oh, I think that had to have counted as one. I think in the rule book, that would have been a rebound or an assist.
See? I turned the conversation from the tights to
pit
you guys against each
Look
other
at him.
Over one or two coup de grace.
Oh, he knows we can never resist going at each other
tights were great.
Over something stupid.
Tights good, one coup de grace. One coup de grace, let's move on.
Okay, fine. Look what you've done. Tearing us apart.
Next,
Tag team action.
Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, your Raw Tag Team Champions against The Bar.
C-Bar.
It's been a long day.
What do they do if they get a third and there's a dude in the middle? Do you have to do this to connect C-Bar?
Well, the thumbs aren't connected. They don't ever connect them.
Oh, they get close.
Yeah, but it's not connected.
The middle person would go like this.
So could they, be.
They'd be
a, that's like a break.
Could,
that's a break in C-bar, though.
They could. Oh, well,
you need to. There you go. That's ultimate C-bar.
There you go.
That's trio C-bar.
Trio. C-bar trios.
I like the bar thing that they do, but I don't like the Dragon Ball Z
that came from is the Raw after Mania, the crowd started singing Sheamus and Cesaro, and they were still facing them.
Yeah.
And they were doing that, and somehow that stuck around after the heel turn.
I thought they just stole it from Hall and Nash.
Yeah, that's where they got it from, I think.
Oh, okay. Anyways, match of the night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it started out a little slow, but like the story going into it, and Sheamus and Cesaro did a promo beforehand, saying that they were the alpha team and that they were going to, much like James just did, drive a wedge between the partners, Seth and Dean, and beat them that way.
The Yoko Ono of going in Raw.
And
two coup de grace.
It's one.
Hold on a second. This match was 7 minutes shorter than Reigns-Cena?
Yeah.
Wow.
And this one seemed like, especially the beginning, it was
seemed like it was a half hour. And
it's because the first two-thirds of this match, there was only one member of Dean and Seth in the ring getting their asses beat.
Yeah, Seth was sleeping.
Oh, yeah.
And I was telling Steve, it's like when we play tag matches in 2K17, where we concentrate so much on trying to get our opponent's partner out of the equation, mm-hmm. knock them off the ring, to double-team, essentially. The person in the ring, and that's exactly how this match played out.
Yeah.
Where they just isolate the bar, C-Bar, isolate one member of Dean Seth, focus all their attack on them, and then also Cesaro lost two of his teeth.
That was awesome. That was like my... Okay, that wasn't my spot of the night. That looked like it really hurt. My spot of the night was when they freaking powerbomb. I liked that when they were like making the other person watch their partner.
Oh, yeah.
When he was holding Seth.
Yeah. That was rad. And because I felt like he was kind of doing that, like, right before the powerbomb spot when he had Seth. So Cesaro was up on the top rope thing. On the
turnbuckle.
Turnbuckle, thank you. And Seth tried to, like, jump up and, like, do a, I don't know, Hoonigan Run or something like that. But instead, Cesaro held him sort of in power in, like, Tree of Woe position.
Upside down.
So that he had to watch Sheamus sort of take out Dean Ambrose.
They were going to do, like, that combo white noise.
Right, yeah.
So then Seth interfered in that.
And so then Cesaro powerbombed Seth onto Dean Ambrose. I thought that would have been a spectacular finish.
I thought that should have been it.
Because here's the thing, especially by that point in the match, I was like, okay, I'm back on board with this feud. Like, it hasn't really been going anywhere. But if this is turning into Usos versus the New Day, which I can watch their tag chemistry all day long, then I'm okay if it just keeps on getting us rematch after rematch and different stipulations and stuff. I'd be okay with that. But it was not to happen. That was a false finish. Dean Ambrose apparently can kick out of anything. And C-Bar ended up going over.
No.
I'm sorry. They ended up losing.
Yeah. Sheamus accidentally kicked Cesaro. Which led to the finish where Seth awkwardly hit his finisher, followed by Dirty Deeds. Dean pinned Sheamus, still champions.
We are.
What was the move that knocked out Cesaro's front teeth? Because I don't think I.
Oh, it was when he got, hit the ring post.
They replayed it. They replayed a bunch afterwards in the crowd.
So it wasn't Seth. It wasn't Seth.
No,
this time it wasn't Seth.
It wasn't Seth.
Brett, relax. It wasn't Seth this time. All right. We're all in agreement that Seth Rollins needs a new finisher again.
Yeah.
Yes, that was very sloppy the way, like, it seemed like he didn't know which way to turn Sheamus. So it was kind of like a, and then he did the knee, and it just looked really awkward. And I'd assume that they still haven't named it yet. It's just really hard.
On the Sam Roberts podcast, Seth has called it.
Freaking knee?
His pretty cool knee.
Okay, well, Corey Graves apparently named it tonight King's Landing.
Isn't that someone else's move?
Well, it's a Game of Thrones reference, I think.
Yeah, but I thought someone else had a move called something like that.
I don't know, man. Somebody tweeted that at me. I don't know who the person was. I'm reiterating what Twitter said. It could be completely full. Man, I didn't even research that. I have no idea if that's true or not.
Either way, it's really like...
It's terrible regardless.
They also did the...
Should be called the shitty knee.
I was telling you guys they did the Omega spot with Dean where he was so tired and exhausted that he collapsed and dodged the bro kick, which I thought was kind of weird that they... I'm fine with the spot, but it was kind of weird that they would throw that into a Seth match considering all the critiques that Seth's been getting with... the knee and
the
all
knee
that.
Thing, yeah.
It was just kind of weird that they would have like a little Omega thing in there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, New Japan is where it's at, so they got to steal from the best. You know.
That's a good point.
Well, there was a YouTube or a Twitter comment today. He said, New Japan is shit. You just sound like a bunch of Meltzer fanboys. Well, for one thing, I am a Meltzer fanboy. Number two, New Japan is awesome.
Yeah, it's the best.
I'm pretty sure I muted that person.
Wow.
Maybe I did. I didn't block them. I don't block anybody. I just mute them. Anyways.
Why would you be against something like new? Like, why would you be against something like the rising tide of something different? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand that either.
Oh, so many great styles.
I've been so used to the same exact style of wrestling since I was little. And, like, I'm getting exposed to something new and refreshing that's, like, reinvigorating for a wrestling fan.
Freaking water, man. That's amazing.
That should be great all across the board.
Yep.
I agree. People are weird, man. next up, we've got a fatal five-way match for the WWE Raw Women's Championship. This was fun because Nia Jax makes things fun.
Yeah, she does.
I love when they team up on her because she's like a giant monster. I love the bit where she had little Alexa Bliss on her shoulder. By the way, Alexa Bliss is over as shit.
Yeah, she
They're going to have to turn. I swear that... I don't know. Do you think they're going to have to turn her face? Or if they're just like, hey, whatever, she's a heel.
She could do the Miz type thing where she's super over but still just be a heel.
Yeah.
Because she's so good at it.
I don't think she would work as a face. Really.
No, not really.
But unless she was maybe chasing the belt.
That spot where Nia Jax had Alexa Bliss on her shoulders and Sasha was about to go on the top rope, she uses Alexa's feet to kick Sasha off the top rope. And then put Sasha on top of Alexa's and Samoan dropped to both of them. That was great.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, carrying both those women's on her shoulder was fantastic.
And then Nia Jax got powerbombed on the outside.
Yeah, boy. Cool. That looked kind of scary for her.
Yeah, Nia Jax took a couple of
She took some big bumps.
Serious bumps, that spot where
God,
she...
God, I missed all this. I was just in the bathroom.
She
was in the bathroom all the time.
She got thrown into
the ring. You're like, boo, bathroom break. Who lets the women rest?
No, I was already out there, but then I came back when people were going apeshit over Nia Jax, and I didn't know why. I had missed it. I got back right when people were going apeshit. What were you saying?
Oh, yeah, Nia Jax got thrown into the ring post. But instead of taking it shoulder first, looks like she took it across her abdominal area and then rolled out the ring. It's pretty...
Yeah, she was a trooper in this match. Everybody just piling on her is great.
It was great.
Alexa Bliss once again took advantage of. I think didn't Sasha do something to Bayley?
They had a couple. They had an extended sequence where they were breaking up pins.
It was
like
Emma Bayley. I forget what the last sequence was, but I know Alexa Bliss hit her glorious DDT, whatever she calls it.
She calls it. It was a hell of a sell by Bayley too.
Wait, what's that?
Bayley sold that DDT wonderfully too.
Oh yeah, I know. No, she spiked herself. It was great.
Yeah, so Alexa's still champion. And I was kind of, after the match, she goes up the ramp and is met by Renee Young, a little short interview. And I was kind of half expecting Asuka to come.
I know! Man, I was thinking about that too. How cool would it have been instead of like, because they made the announcement that Asuka's going to be
debuting at TLC.
How cool would it have been instead of just making a cheesy announcement like that if Alexa goes up to the top of the ramp, lights just get killed in the arena, and then we see like. on like the thing, and then everything comes back to normal, and everybody's like, "Oh damn, it's Oscar!"
I know. No, screw that. Have Oscar's theme play. She comes out, and right as Alexa Bliss is talking about how she's a goddess, and she just says, "Nobody's ready for Oscar."
Yeah.
And
then she kicks her and then wins the title.
Right there.
We're terrible fantasy booking tonight.
You guys seem very optimistic.
That'd be great because we were there.
Oscar, like,
oh, they're giving her that title immediately.
Yep.
They better. I'm going to stop watching. No, I'm not going to do
that. It's not true. It's going to make her money, Steve.
Yeah.
It's just weird the way they've, like, handled the women on the main roster. I mean, at first they were all so well done.
Yeah.
And then, like, they've kind of deteriorated back into this weird specific role, and the only ones that you care about are those specific few that, like, maybe it's because they're on Total Divas, I don't know if that's the rumor,
man,
but it is just a very select few, and, like, you don't have a reason to, like, care. Like, there was no reason going into this that I personally thought, like, Alexa Bliss would lose. I just didn't see it happening. Mm-hmm.
I thought there was a possibility they'd give it to Nia in between Alexa and Asuka. Because I do think they're going to have... You're probably right. I shouldn't probably have a reason to be kind of optimistic about Asuka. We'll find out relatively shortly. But no, you do make a good point. So we, for our review show that went up today, when you're watching this yesterday, we reviewed NXT Rival, which featured the four horsewomen in a fatal four-way back in NXT in, like, 2015. My God. Talk about remembering, like, how they would let them wrestle.
Night and day.
Like, they just, on main roster, they go through the motions. And in NXT, they had so much passion. They were proving themselves out there.
Yeah.
I loved NXT Sasha Banks. I absolutely hate main roster Sasha Banks.
Yeah.
It's what they did to her, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I just can't. Bayley was getting booed for a while,
I feel the same way about Bayley. I don't quite hate. Because there's the thing, like, Sasha, with that little interview she gave on Sam Roberts, it's hard for me to hate her because I think she hates her. I think she hates, like, the direction.
She hates her own direction.
I think she hates Sasha Banks on main roster. And they haven't done anything with her. I think that's part of the problem. They haven't done anything with Sasha necessarily, but at least she had that shine with the feud with Charlotte last year.
Yeah, it was so great.
Which was really, really good. They did a lot with that. With Bayley, it's as if as soon as she got to main roster, nobody understood what made her popular in NXT.
Yeah, it's like they never watched her in NXT.
Yeah, and so they went with this weird, like, superficial, oh, well, she's childlike. So she never grew up, and her dad was hanging out with her when she was still in the fourth grade, and he went on dates with her. And it was like, where are you coming up with this crap?
I know. Just
like,
instantly.
That was never, even on Breaking Ground, like, she had a freaking boyfriend, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's my bigger thing is, like, they had, with Bayley coming out of NXT, they had a license to print money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the way she gets over with the kids and with, like, the adults, They had so much money.
The amount of people that said you cannot possibly fuck up Bayley on the main roster.
Yeah. And there you go.
They did.
There you go. And there might be something to the Total Divas thing. That is such a bummer if it's the truth. That's such a bummer. But you know, I don't maybe Oscar should be on Total Divas. Give her the belt forever. I don't know. It was a fun match. I had a lot of fun spots. It was one of the shorter matches on the card, it looks like.
Yeah, it was.
Longer
than the main event, barely.
Yeah, Alexa Bliss retained, pinning
Bayley.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. I mean, it's all, I don't know. I don't know if they're just biding their time until Asuka gets there.
They did a good job of establishing some stuff between Bayley and Sasha that's been simmering for a while.
Yeah, that got people.
They had a really brief one-on-one encounter and everybody else outside the ring, and they broke up some pinfall attempts the other was doing. So
yeah,
they're adding some heat to that burgeoning feud.
I feel like they could do just, like, so much more, though, with the people that they have. It's like even someone like Mickie James, who they brought back on SmackDown, who had, like, a really, you know, big role, and then switched to Raw, and poof, be gone. Where the hell is she?
Yeah,
like,
she had the Raw house show we went to on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she could easily be used to like, you know, enhance somebody else or build somebody up or do something something with her, or, you know, even Emma with her fucking hashtag bullshit that she's got going on. It's just like, you don't buy into Emma's crap because no, they're not going to let you believe that. Yeah. Like, she always loses anyway. So there's no point to even buy into Emma right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always that false hope, dude. I'm always like, maybe, and then, nah. But I like Alexa Bliss. I like her anyway.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
On the mic. She just, like, if you go back and you look at Bayley versus Sasha Banks at, you know, those takeovers.
Oh, man.
You know, it's like, oh, that's right, we can have that. We could have that.
We could be
here. As main events as well.
As main events, exactly.
And programs like that and matches like that could main event
a major pay-per-view. Absolutely. Again, I just wonder, I don't know if it's one of those Vince versus Triple H things. I don't know.
Yeah, no,
because he seems to love, like, building up the women's division down there in NXT.
I don't know if you guys seen that. He probably did, obviously. Like a while back, there was that dirt sheet report where he was kind of pissed about the fact that, like, it's like Triple H is grooming people to just come up to the slaughter.
They'll
sit down there, even now. It's like, even if Bayley is a lost project and Sasha Banks is a lost project and all these people that Triple H built up down in NXT, it's like, he has to move on and he's moving into, like, the Mae Young Classic people. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's got to build more people up.
Yeah.
Like, more people to come up and everything like that.
Yeah.
It's like, those projects that Triple H has kind of had to let go,
it just
kind of got ruined in someone else's hands.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That can't sit too well for, like...
I wonder, it's kind of interesting because he gave an interview, and I'd love to find out, like, more about this, but he gave an interview with, I think, Sports Illustrated, or maybe it was a conference call, where he said that NXT isn't close to what he envisions its final form as being. And I'm really curious what that final form in his head
would be. He wants a third brand.
He obviously, that's probably number one, he wants it to be its own full brand. I would love to see, like, I would actually love to see a 2-hour. I mean, I love NXT the way it is. Maybe it'd be folly to extend it to 2 hours. But there's so much talent there. You know, and especially given what we know about who's been signed from the Mae Young Classic, just how many of those competitors have been signed, it's like, man, they're going to have to make room for them, you know. One thing I thought about the other day, too, you know, like, because NXT, they're the ones who brought up the Four Horsemen and all that kind of stuff. Now a lot of the Mae Young Classic people are coming over to NXT. It'd be kind of cool if they, like, started a women's mid-title belt as opposed to a men's mid-title belt. Like, if you really want to give a kick in the pants or something, make, like, the women the most dominant.
Weren't people on about when the Team Bad was a thing, like a women's tag thing? When Team Bad was a thing. And
they seemingly have
submission
enough
sorority
at this point.
All those wonderful names.
Yeah, the weird porno names that they gave. Like, that was weird.
That was
weird. Submission sorority. Oh, that's already a porn name. Really? That's a weird
Quick,
name.
Let's change it.
Yeah. And it was like, and it just got worse and worse. It's like the Pinky Club or something like that. Or it was like, some weird shit. Anyways, next up, John Cena came out.
Yeah.
People
crab
were like,
pop.
Cena sucks. Let's go, Cena. And then Roman Reigns came out. And everybody just collectively booed the shit out of him.
Just booze.
That weird dulled look on his face. Like, he doesn't know where he parked his car. So anyways, Roman Reigns and John Cena had a match.
Yeah.
It was a 22-minute match.
Yeah, they gave it time.
That I feel like, I saw the first 10 minutes of this match, there was a lot of lumbering about.
Well, they were
overselling each other.
They were trying to tell the story of Reigns overpowering Cena, and Cena was just selling.
Was so much space and time
each
blow.
Roman was trying to get heat, I think.
Yeah, they were trying to feed into the crowd.
Boy, this match was... I honestly thought... I was actually really looking forward to this match. Because Roman Reigns can bring it when he's got the right partner. And John Cena can really bring it when he really wants to. And I don't know, man. I just felt like this was...
It didn't really kick up any sort of momentum.
The last 5 minutes were really decent.
Yeah, the last third was pretty good.
So the first, 20 minutes or 15 minutes. First 15 minutes... I was just sitting there like, man, they're taking their sweet time with this. And it really didn't feel like it was going many places.
Until Cena hit the first AA. And then Reigns kicked out of that. Cena gave him a top rope AA. Reigns kicked out of that.
He gave him another
Gave AA. Him the rolling one,
and
too.
Rolling AA. Reigns kicked out of that.
Four A's.
And it took one spear.
Eight A's altogether.
Baffling.
One spear to beat.
One Superman punch.
After the main event, I told this to Steve. This is what's going to happen. No one's going to kick out of the... Between now and Mania, no one's going to kick out of the spear. No one's going to kick out of the F5. So when Reigns kicks out of the F5 at WrestleMania, this could be a huge deal.
That'll be their sell point.
That's going to be their
the finishes.
Yep. Or at least one of the B stories.
So do you think, like... Obviously, there's a lot... There's a lot going into this match. Like, there's the dirt sheet shit that they've been kind of working off
of.
But there's also been the big... Just as much as the dirt sheet thing has been talked about and them bringing that up in promos and stuff, there's also been the fact that it's, like, this match being wasted on No Mercy and not a WrestleMania. I mean, it's been brought up in, like, numerous podcasts. Like, Edge talked about it on his podcast, too, I listened to, where he was even baffled about why they would use this WrestleMania-caliber match, even they build it like that, you know, on a No Mercy. So, like, I guess bias aside, because we attended, and, it was nearby, so we were able to go see it. So, like, for me, that's like, hey... You're going to throw this on that card?
Yeah, right.
Fine
right,
by me, right? But do you think that this was sufficient in that sense? Like, do you think they should have saved it for WrestleMania? Now having, like, it's already been done and over with, do you think that they should have saved it?
I'll say the build to the match was a WrestleMania-worthy build. The match itself wasn't. I think they could have put on a more effective, entertaining, and compelling performance in the ring. I just think, I think I understand the story they were trying to tell. With Reigns going out there and wanting to prove something to Cena, hey, this is my yard now, and dominating for the first part of the match and the kicking out of everything. But there just wasn't enough give and take throughout the match, it didn't feel like. Because part of it is the inevitability of Reigns winning. We all know he's going to win. Mm. So regardless what Cena does, Reigns was going to kick out. And so even when Reigns kicked out of the double A, you're like, all right, well, we knew that was going to happen.
I think
there's a little drama involved in it. That's part of the problem.
Ideally, if you don't have to deal with John Cena's things are amplified when they're at WrestleMania. I think moments are made bigger at WrestleMania simply for happening at WrestleMania. I think was the match what I had hoped it would be? No. Was the match what I think these guys could have put on? Like, I think they could have put on something much better. I think I have faith in both of them. But if you to adjust the question, I think that the passing of the torch thing probably should have been either a SummerSlam,
Mania, or Rumble,
a Mania, maybe even a Rumble. I absolutely think so. But that being said, I think Cena did everything. He literally raised Roman's hand, said something to him, like he literally did everything he could do without this is what Brian Zane said earlier, right? Except getting an actual torch. Giving it to him physically and saying Cena did everything he possibly could to indicate that this is that moment.
How many people have to do that though? How many people have if they have The Rock do it and he gets booed?
Mm-hmm,
granted, it's in Philly, but still, like
The Rock's done it. The Undertaker kind of did.
Oh yeah,
Cena just did. Triple H did.
Yeah,
that's at least four.
That's like you're. I get it. You're building like a laundry list for his rep, but my God,
they're mortgaging the entire future of the company on this one guy.
Yeah,
it never works.
And I feel like kind of to piggyback off of what you guys said, I feel like maybe if it had a little bit more time with the build being as good as it was, and then bringing in the little dirt sheet stuff, I feel like they could have definitely had it mean something more. Because I feel like. For Cena, and for Roman, for that matter, it's like they kind of go in with their similarities and stuff. They go into matches with kind of the same premise, at least in a way, especially when it comes to their track records, and it's almost always against, like, a big indie guy. And for a good portion of the audience, it's like when you see AJ versus Cena, it's like you have a different mentality there because it's like, you know... AJ's background, you know, Cena's background. It's like, you know, like, how they built Cena, and you know how AJ kind of built himself on the independence. And that's kind of been Cena's thing, whether it was Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, or anybody, like, you know, his longevity.
And then
Roman had kind of a similar thing as well with, like, this person, that person, that person. So when you have, like, that, like, it's like almost like two rocks facing each other instead of, like, a rock and a paper. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If that analogy works.
That's a good analogy.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's different it's just a whole different kind of atmosphere, and it's a whole different type of match. And I think it's kind of hard, other than the promos and stuff, to really convey that in the match itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when they sort of had, I mean, it's kind of on a different level, obviously, but we always felt that Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn should have had their blow up at, like, SummerSlam, WrestleMania,
something. Not.
And instead they gave it a, like, Battleground or something.
Like that, yeah.
So you just have to kind of accept, okay, well, this is the circumstances. But ideally, yeah, this was a Mania-level build-up.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think, look, the best matches don't usually happen at WrestleMania.
Oh, no.
And so I would give this match the pass for, you know, what it was. But, yeah, it does seem like it should have been. But, like I said, Cena, like, they did close-ups on him afterwards. He was doing the whole, man, hanging up the old boots for now, you know.
Yeah, they gave it, like, the feeling that this is, like, the one and only time you will see this match.
They did,
and that's the part where it makes it feel kind of a bit lackluster, where if you wanted to be more, it's like maybe you could hope for a second match. But, made it seem this is it.
Yeah. One and done, yeah.
No, they're definitely, Roman's on the road. It's just the question now is, where does Roman go from John Cena? We still have.
Well, he's going to be on Miz. He's going to be on Miz TV tomorrow.
They can do Miz Roman.
Miz.
Yeah. People are going to like, you want Miz to be a face. That's a quick route.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you're not going to be able to. Boy, he's going to have his work cut out for him. There's him. I mean, he could still beat.
He still has to beat Braun at some point between now and Mania.
Oh, you think they're going to go back to Braun? Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Because that's. I mean, I know he beat him earlier this year, but during the whole course of their feud, Roman's been, apart from that one time, gotten the short end of the stick. So I think he's going to beat Braun somewhere close to WrestleMania.
Okay, I can see that.
Just to kind of tie that story off.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how anxious. I mean, yeah, maybe.
I mean, they have a problem with Braun losing, it seems.
He should face Seth and Finn, I would think.
Yeah.
Wait, have they done Bray Roman?
Oh, yeah.
They have?
Yeah.
Am I missing, like, a huge chunk of time when they took, like, forever to do that?
There was a pretty major feud.
Was there? Okay.
Yeah, they had a Hell in a Cell match.
Did they?
Yeah.
When was that?
2-3 years ago.
Oh, well, that's a while. That's before he was on the road to WrestleMania, dude. So I could see them doing that. I could see Finn Balor maybe being... They're gonna have him beat everybody. But you don't think they're going to have him beat Finn?
I don't know.
You think Finn's big enough?
You mean in terms of physical stature?
No. I mean, like, in terms of power rankings.
Oh, I mean, yeah, definitely he is, but I don't know.
Do you think... Well, explain yourself. Why don't you think they'd have him face Finn Balor between now and Mania? To further solidify that he's the man.
Well, it depends on how much they want to mortgage their entire future to Roman Reigns.
So you're thinking that they want to maybe protect Finn a little bit more?
Yeah.
I don't have that faith, dude. That's what I was trying to get you to say. I don't have that faith. I think they're going to have him kill Finn Balor.
Well, and part of that is based on I read something that the reason that Finn Balor hasn't had a Universal title shot is because they don't want
is
to lose.
Is he Plan B?
I don't think it's Plan B, but just they want to protect him.
Wow. I would love for that to be the case.
Yeah.
I would totally love for that to be the case. I don't have faith in that.
I don't either.
That'd be great. Boy, how awesome was that when Finn beat Roman when Roman was being punished?
Oh, that was
for the
great.
Policy?
That was great.
Oh, that was... God, that was a beautiful episode of Raw. That was a freaking beautiful episode of Raw. Anyway, next up, Reigns wins. Enzo Amore, the new cruiserweight champion. I called this. Larson called Alexa going over, so we officially split predictions because those are the only two matches that we
differed on.
Yeah.
Like this. I would have been okay with this outcome if Neville had put on a clinic before this. Instead of just kind of toying with him a little bit.
Again, this was a slow freaking match.
Yeah. Like, if Neville went out there and just, like, wrestled
and
circles.
And schooled the crap out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it took Enzo going and getting that belt from the timekeeper area and bringing it to the ring.
They also...
to distract Neville and then kick him the balls.
Crowd chanted, "This is boring."
Yeah.
Universally at some point.
Yeah.
But then they also... I don't know if the big screen at the top was the TV feed, I guess, like, for the network. But they didn't... They didn't even catch Enzo getting the belt at first.
Right.
Like, when he first went over there and grabbed it from the timekeeper area,
yeah.
they were on Neville the whole time on the camera. And so, like, it was weird because he was juggling the belt at rate. Like, he was, like, clutching it, and then he dropped it, and then he picked it back up again. And, like, he had to hold on to it for, like, a lingering amount of time until they finally cut to him for him to continue and come in. It was really weird that they didn't catch that, I guess. Just him initially grabbing it from the timekeeper area.
Yeah, that was weird. There are pros and cons to this.
I understand the pros of putting the belt on him is going to, in theory, help 205 Live and people will tune in. Doesn't mean I have to like it.
I want to know what is the general consensus on Enzo here?
Oh.
I mean, he's a lousy wrestler.
Okay, yeah, he's a lousy wrestler.
I think we all agree on that.
I like how he's been booked on 205 Live because they're directly addressing the fact that he cannot hang with the cruiserweights. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that he's the perfect and exact contradiction to Neville. I like that because anything that will get more interesting Neville, I'm a fan of. Taking the belt away from him and putting it on this absolute scrub of a human being gives us a Neville that is going to be so entertaining and so fun to watch. Watching the rest of 205 Live, including Cedric Alexander, just have conniptions over this pile of trash wearing this prestigious title, I think will be entertaining. Does it devalue the title? I don't know.
No, I don't think it devalues the title.
I mean, it probably does. It's supposed to be for the best wrestlers. Dude,
when Tozawa beat him and he showed up at NXT looking like absolutely miserable, every time they'd cut to Neville and he's just sitting there like...
Yeah.
Like, just looking as miserable as can be. He was on the panel.
Yeah.
Just miserable. Yeah, like, his hair just looks terrible.
Oh, it was
like,
great. And this is
like
that.
Looked like slept for a
to,
week.
Like, the nth degree. This is, like, so much more worse because it's the guy that he's mocked. And it's like, at least Akira Tozawa was, like, a hell of a wrestler.
Yeah.
Enzo's just a piece of crap. And so, I think it's going to make for some... Because I think 205 Live, they've got their story, their writing chops in order.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how this is going to play out. Like I said in our predictions episode, there's not much more they can do with Neville holding the title and Enzo chasing it because you can only fake it so far with him.
I just thought they might have waited until TLC so it could have been some sort of ladder match and that would have, for the most part, covered up Enzo's deficiencies.
That's kind of what I figured. Something like, was it Sheamus when he first won the belt? Like a slipperoo where Cena like slips through the table. I forget who it was that like when Cena was in a table match or something
and he slipped and
fell through the table and that was it kind of thing. Like I figured they would do some kind of route like that with him where like he just kind of accidentally wins.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much based on like his skill or you know the cheating route that he's been going.
Yeah.
But more so just an accidental win.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of
comedy of errors. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean I think that Neville he looks insane when he doesn't have the belt.
Yeah,
but at the
yeah.
same time, it's this Enzo thing is the like the weirdest shit probably going on like on Raw right now. I want to say it's the most intriguing thing because you hear the dirt sheets where it's like Vince just likes to see Enzo get fucking ragdolled.
Yeah, exactly.
He loves it, so he just goes out and gets his ass beat all the time. He goes out and tries to stand toe-to-toe with Cass and gets shot right down away.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, he has a bad rep in the back, and oh, he spends his money on strippers, and the stripper calls him out. And, like, he's all this, like, shit to him, but at the same time, it's like he just... I don't know if it inadvertently works for him, like, because it's obvious, or at least the rumor is that like they're trying to shit on him. It's like you have the Miz verbally shitting on him, and in a way, like when you're saying that it doesn't really devalue the title, but at the same time, like Miz was literally telling him you were demoted to 205 Live because we didn't know what to do with you.
Yeah,
and it was like stuff like that they've been saying to him on air. It's like they almost make it so. They want the audience to not like Enzo anymore. But even though he's shit in the ring, he still sells merch. Like, him and Cass sold merch like crazy. Why they split him, I don't know. But even then, Enzo by himself can still do that.
Yeah.
He can, he's got
he spikes ratings.
He's got marinara sauce or something coming out on the WWE shop. It's like, Like, I've liked Enzo, and even before all this shit happened, like, I liked Enzo when he appeared in NXT originally with, his little short hair, when he first got with Cass, when even, I didn't really like it when Carmella was added into the mix, and it was kind of weird, but, like, they found their groove, and I was on board when everybody was hype as shit when WrestleMania the day after came out, like, and everyone was like, call him up, and then suddenly it's like, fuck Enzo. Everybody hates Enzo now, but it's like, this guy can still make the company a lot of money.
Yeah,
he is garbage in the ring, and that's, sure, just throw him around, ragdoll him, whatever, but he can still talk, and he can still sell the shit out of the stuff that you want to convey to the audience, you know? It's like, Braun coming out and completely just demolishing him was great.
Yeah.
But why was it great? Because Enzo ragdolled him. Yeah. You know, like, like, in a way, he helped make that great segment, just by dying on impact. Yeah. Much. It's like, I can't hate Enzo no matter what they stack against him. In fact, it almost makes it seem like I like him more because of how they're stacking the deck against Enzo in a way.
Like, and the way they write him on 205 Live, I feel that too, because it's like, man, you almost feel for the guy?
Yeah.
Because, like, he has the entire company against him?
I don't care what he does with his money outside of WWE. I don't care that he talked to a stripper about WWE business stuff. That's none of my business. That's, like, that's nothing that has to do with me on, like, an entertainment level. But when I see Enzo go out, I'm sure he gets annoying and stuff on occasion. But when he gets, like, his ass beat or something like that, or he sells something, he's still over. His catchphrase is still over.
Yeah,
like, I don't know. You can't deny that power that Enzo at least still has, no matter how much you stack the deck against him.
I appreciate him on a couple levels. Number one, he has boosted the profile of 205 Live. Yeah. I'm a fan of 205
Live.
Yeah,
same here.
He does, especially where 205 Live needs it most with the crowd, he is an injection of adrenaline for that crowd, and we need that crowd to be hot for those matches because the matches are really good.
Mm-hmm.
My main beef with Enzo has always been his promos just go on forever sometimes. They go on so long.
Sometimes they don't make sense.
Or they don't make
sense. The other part of Enzo is simply, I'd like 205 Live to be sort of the reward, like, for the really good wrestlers, and then you inject him in there, and it's like, oh, man. But at the end of the day, it's wrestling.
Exactly.
And he's bringing out some really good storyline. Like, the Cedric Alexander, for the number one contendership match, he was lumbar checking the shit out of everybody. He was the heir apparent. He was the guy who was going to win. And then Enzo comes out of nowhere after sitting out the entire match, gets the role. That is fodder for a great story
for
Cedric Alexander, who hasn't really been in any great stories beyond the Noam Dar, Alicia Fox thing. So Enzo is this catalyst for a lot of really interesting things that can happen. And so I really like the writing on 205 Live. Vince obviously doesn't seem to have much of a hand in that. And so, I
don't even need to use him in a wrestler capacity, like, forever, you know what I mean? Like, he's great on the mic or whatever, and even though it's sometimes mundane and doesn't get his point across, especially that with him against The Miz, like, he got trashed.
But,
on good occasions, you know what I mean, you could stick him with somebody else, and you could have him be a manager or something like that.
Absolutely.
It's like, he's definitely a useful tool. Granted, he's a tool, I guess.
He's one of the most colorful characters on the roster, and if he left abruptly, if they fired him or whatever, or if he decided to leave at the end of his contract, there'd be a giant hole there, you know? And 3 years later, he would get a massive, massive pop when he came back, you know?
That's why I don't understand the mentality that some people have where they just want him out because of the way that WWE is kind of, I guess, what they've given in terms of Enzo on TV lately, but I feel like he is an asset, you know. He does sell, even if it's just merch, and we were told before, like, that him and Cass sold a shit ton of merch.
It's so weird they broke them up.
It is so weird.
Because part of the joy of that group was, you know what, even when Enzo goes on too long, you can always look at Cass, and even Cass would be lost. And there's such a charm in that. Because it's like, oh, man, these guys legitimately are best friends. And Cass just sits there
and he just sort of shrugs him off and smiles and lets him ramble. Yeah. And sometimes he sort of cracks a smile, and you can tell it's a legit smile. Which there is charm when it comes to watching people. Like, I'm sure you and Alex did the same thing. It's like, you can tell you guys actually like each other and, like, get a kick out of each other. Mm-hmm. Same thing with me and Larson. It's like, it's always fun when you can see two guys who actually legitimately get a kick out of each other. And you can see the history there between them just from them, like, bantering.
I mean, you also got that guy that'll stand there and tell you to shut up.
Exactly.
Or somebody,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like the guy that'll be like, all right, calm down now. Yeah. Like, just cut it off now or whatever. But, like, they kind of let him loose where he doesn't have that anymore.
It's
but.
Kind of the appeal of the club still to me is that these guys look like they're legitimately having a good time together because they are legitimately best friends, you know? And it's just a bummer that Carl Anderson is a doormat.
Yeah, it is. That's a huge
one. Come back over to SmackDown and just give them the AJ again.
Dude, I'm telling you, we've been saying that forever. They're like kind of tweeners now anyway.
Yeah, if AJ's doing the same tweener thing, like, give them the AJ and let them do the same exact good brother nerd with AJ.
Fantastic.
That'd be
same
great.
Deal.
Did you see the club mask that AJ wore?
Yes. Awesome.
Fantastic.
Wasn't awesome.
That was rad.
That's pretty neat.
He actually, like, he took a couple of the pictures and put them on, like, his Instagram. Like, that took pictures.
Yeah.
So, like, I saw him circulating around.
That was sick. That was so cool. So I'm glad that we figured out Enzo Amore as a group. That's good. Let's move on to the main event.
Yeah.
A 9-minute destruction fest.
And you know, before, when we were doing predictions, I said, I think this match is going to follow the template of the Samoa Joe match. And it pretty much did.
Pretty much did. Really, really fantastic match. Just chock full of destruction and big bastards hurting each other.
Well, there wasn't that much destruction.
Followed by, nobody's getting put through tables, but Brock looked, like, sincerely winded and gassed, and he looked like he was, you know, giving his all to Braun, and then followed up, finished off in a really abrupt single F5 manner.
Absolutely. Everybody was just kind of like...
Everybody, once again...
That's it.
What?
Just like with the Samoa Joe match, you're right, same template. People are just like, really? One F5? Really? The guy no-sold a German suplex on Raw, and now he's not even... So,
it took, and Braun gave Brock, what, 4 power slams?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And 2 of them, I think, what was it, like 2 or 3 of them, he couldn't even get the pin?
Yeah, because so there was a really awkward spot where Brock put the Kimura lock on Braun. Braun, like, throws Lesnar into a turnbuckle. Brock won't break the hold.
Right.
And Braun reaches out and grabs the top rope, but the ref doesn't break the hold. So I don't know if this is a situation where Braun forgot exactly how that sequence was supposed to go, where he was supposed to throw Lesnar.
Yeah, that was so confusing.
And then just fall the mat and not grab the top rope, wait for the bottom rope to break the hold, or what? But it was really confusing because it seemed like everybody in the arena was like, he grabbed the rope, break the hold.
Like,
they start counting to 5.
Even little kids I heard screaming, he's got the rope.
Yeah.
Like, what's he going to do? Everybody knows. He got the rope. That's it.
Yeah, he got 5 count to break the hold.
It's surprising that either the ref or Brock didn't say, hey, look on the rope.
Well, I noticed, I looked up on the screen when they were on the ground.
Yeah.
And at one point, it looked like Braun looked up to Brock and said something.
Yeah.
And Brock, like, to ask a question, maybe. And then Brock said something, and then shortly after that, they went back to getting out of that hold. Mm. It was right before Braun reached over to grab the bottom rope.
Okay.
Huh. So I know Braun was saying, I don't know, I forgot what I was supposed
God,
to do.
God, I wish those guys were mic'd up.
Oh, gosh, that'd be amazing.
That'd be fantastic.
Speaking of the kids shouting out, a little tidbit that I forgot with Bray Wyatt and Finn.
Yeah.
There was a kid behind me that yelled out top of his lungs, about Bray Wyatt, said he's fat.
No.
Said he's a retarded bastard.
Oh, my gosh. What the hell?
It was a child.
Flipping kids, man.
It was a child that said that.
You know, my kid has been saying, oh, shit, now. She's 2.5. And when my car bounces too much, she goes, oh, shit. And the other day, we were laying in bed watching some dolphin movie. And, like, this dolphin washes up on the beach. It's, like, kind of a darker movie. It's, like, a kid's movie.
It's kind of messed up.
Yeah, it was messed up. So the dolphin's all trapped in this freaking, like, man-made whatever. Climate change, whatever. I don't know. Anyway, a kid comes up and he, like, takes the rope off the dolphin's head. And then it was stuck there. And there's, like, a little bit of blood. And Bama says, oh, shit. And I said, Alabama, you can't say shit. And then, like, 2 seconds goes by. I'm like, oh, man. All right, you can say shit.
That easy.
Yeah, you got me.
Once you understand what I'm saying, then I'll lay down the law. Anyways, yeah, so kids are terrible. There was a kid behind me, behind us, during a women's match. She said to Nia Jax, "You look like a whale."
Oh, that's awful. I thought you were talking about the guy behind us during the Lesnar match that as soon as Braun comes out and starts attacking Lesnar, he says, like, "Already?"
Yeah,
he was incensed.
That was pretty good. That was like the biggest Brock Lesnar fan.
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought you were going to talk about.
And then the guy in front of us like looked back at him because he just was incessantly screaming about Brock.
Yeah.
The guy in front of us looked behind us and goes, "He's very excited." I was like, "Yes, he is." Brock Lesnar went over with one F5. But again, fun match. Like a lot of fun shit happening. Braun's great. Braun's always great.
Braun is great.
I told you guys when we were in the car right over here that something happened during the main event that made me... Like, I kind of figured Brock would win, but there was something that happened in the match that was really stupid. And for some reason, it swayed my judgment on the result. It made me think that Braun would win.
Ooh.
It's the stupidest thing, but I was looking up, like, at the monitor, and I saw a little white piece of confetti fall.
Oh, I saw that.
It was a little white piece of confetti, and so... I think
new Universal Champion.
I thought there would be a celebration. I was like, are they gonna give it to him?
Yeah.
Like, is this one little confetti a sign? Did it just somehow slip out from up there?
Yeah.
But no, it didn't. It was just, I felt sick after I thought that.
No, you know what? I think I actually kind of thought the same thing, although I thought it happened like earlier in the night. I thought I saw a piece of confetti. I don't know. That's weird.
That is strange.
Yeah.
What was the confetti for?
I don't know. It was just a little one white piece of confetti, and I just I thought like maybe it was just a prior celebration in the Staples Center. I don't know. I have no idea. But
they always have confetti at the ready. You never know when you're going to
get
confetti.
So I guess I shouldn't really take that into account. One thing though that was weird with this that kind of irked me with this the build of this match was I kind of felt that they underplayed a little bit of Samoa Joe's like involvement with Brock prior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When Paul Heyman comes out on these Raws and he's like saying how Brock has never been like shook like this before and stuff like that, it's like, didn't you see the same exact thing with Samoa Joe? Like, it was like when Samoa Joe was doing it, I legit felt it should be Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Joe is bringing it to Brock and this is like, he's coming out and he's doing this nut, he's doing the thing with Heyman in the corner where he's like,
great.
You know, whispering in his ear.
Oh, that was amazing.
He's like, you know, I'm not afraid of Brock and all that stuff. It's like shit that you really haven't seen happen with this iteration of Brock, the way they built this Brock up.
Yeah,
But then they kind of started doing it with Braun where he's the monster handler and he's just monster handling Brock. Yeah. And it to me, it almost downplayed what Joe just did last month or the month before. And I felt like it's like, well, doesn't this in a way hurt Joe? Like, like you guys were saying that Joe was the first time that somebody was a threat to the Universal title, and I legitimately thought, like, maybe they'll finally give it to Joe or something new. Granted, I had heard that Hayden was, you know, vying for that to happen or something like that at the time. But I was like, maybe they will actually give it to Joe. But with the Braun build, I was just kind of like, in my head, it just kept going around that it's kind of belittling Joe's build a little bit. It's like, it's ruining Joe a little, even though he's injured. Like, when Joe comes back and he's the fucking destroyer, I guess Braun's the destroyer now, so I don't know. It's weird.
It might be a case of, I've noticed they've done this before, when somebody's injured, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, you know? It's like maybe they don't want to give any like false hope that Samoa Joe might be involved in this, or if it's just a matter of
we've moved on. I think they just take each individual feud separately.
Yeah,
and
they're isolated.
They will do whatever they have to do to build heat for that feud.
Yeah,
and that just kept popping in my head.
The only reference the past of the Undertaker's involved.
Yeah,
otherwise why bother? But no, Joe's gonna be huge when he comes back. But Larson was telling me, he was like, man, I wonder if Joe's gonna get involved in the main event because it's kind of around the time I think he should be coming back. It's been a little while.
Yeah, it's 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah,
he's gonna be out.
Been around that amount of time, I think. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he's gonna do next.
I just want to see that badass Samoa Joe again, like when he
the
NXT shot of him half busted open.
Like
he can just play that intimidating no shit character so well, like Samoa Joe can, and you can just feel it being borderline like legitimate, even though Braun is huge.
I
felt there was more of an intensity with the Joe versus Brock.
Well, I mean, especially if you know, with Joe's history wrestling, you know he's legit in the ring.
And his promos, I've said this a couple of times, his promos make him seem like a character out of Pulp Fiction. You know what I mean? He's like a Tarantino character. That's what I love about Joe is that he brings that level of like, almost like, I don't know, like a cinematic character to the because you don't see that a lot. It's kind of like when we were talking about Heenan. Like Heenan brought a level of comedy that was so clever and so witty that stood apart from everything corny about the WWF. Joe brings that level of character work to the WWE.
But at first, it didn't even seem like they gave him much. It was like Joe gets a little segment, and he takes this little segment and runs with it.
Exactly. Pure gold at it.
And then they give him a little more, and then they give him a little more. And then it just became a thing where Joe seemed like a viable contender. Yeah. And
you can see why Brock, evidently, from what the dirt sheets say, loves working with Joe. You know, it's like because Joe's going to bring that passion. He's probably going to lay his punches in. It wouldn't surprise me if, given the choice between the two, Brock would much rather work with Joe, who probably lays in his punches a bit more, as opposed to Braun, who might be thinking, this guy's, like, worth millions to the company. I'm not going to give him that extra
shit on my career.
Exactly. And Brock could, you know, say, hey, you know, what are you, fucking rookie? You know, what's your deal?
Yeah.
Lay into me. We're a couple of big bastards. Make it look real.
Because
Brock can take that.
Yeah.
So I think Brock likes that. So I don't know, but I don't know. Brock was he gave Braun a lot of respect. I mean, it was sort of just a different thing. Like with Joe, it was like a vicious fight. With Braun, it was like a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, man,
overpowered.
Yeah, it was the overpowered thing, which is kind of an interesting angle to take with it. So I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting, I guess, to see what happens on Raw tomorrow. See if Brock is done with it. I mean, Brock is scheduled for tomorrow, isn't he?
I don't think so.
Oh, no?
I doubt he'll be back till Survivor Series. The lead-up to Survivor Series.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a waste.
Do you think, wasn't there a rumor of another shake-up happening soon, or was that?
Yeah.
That rumor sort of came and went like a fart, because I don't think that, because it was like, I mean, the last one was just that, what was the last one? Was the last one Mania?
That was the first one. They did a couple moves after SummerSlam.
Okay. Yeah, so that's it. That's a recap. We're just, we're tacking this on. We ran out of space on this card. But we need to do it. We need to do a wrap-up.
Yeah.
James, thanks for coming back.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Give me the old too sweet. Ah, look at that. My own wife.
What was the rule? I get one from you, right? Or you? No.
Okay.
Apparently not.
I thought I did last time.
He's upset that you don't like the gray tights. You know, my wife won't give me a too sweet now.
Good for her.
She's taken, like, his...
Why do you get back on the gray tights thing? What about the coup de grace?
One of them.
There was like three. There was the standing one, like you just did it.
That's just standing stomp.
Yeah, well, that's a coup de. That's a good one.
No.
And then there was the two.
No.
Three coup de grace. Trey de grace.
Are you on the three boat now?
Yeah, I'm on the three.
You're going to be
I'm on the three island.
Nobody's going to say three.
I'm on the island.
Nobody's
going to
say three.
When you put 2 feet on somebody's chest, it's a coup de grace.
People in the comments will say that the definitive answer if it was one or two coup de grace.
There,
if the one in the back of the head counted, I don't think there's going to be three.
On the back of the head. Wait, so what?
You're saying
there's no standing one.
I'm saying no standing one.
Okay.
But both from the top rope, one to the back of the head, one to the body. I thought it was two.
Yeah, I'm on three.
There's no three.
Yeah,
that's a losing
cause,
Steve.
Yeah, there's no three.
You're a losing cause. Anyways, James, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Check out Couch Top. It's great stuff.
Yes.
And until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.